welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Poncek, a markets reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor on the markets team.
It was just last week that higher tariffs caught investors by surprise, sending the S&P to its worst week of the year. Well, now markets are bouncing back. Is this as bad as it will get? We'll analyze the latest on U.S.-China trade. Plus, the bond market hasn't been any more sure this year that the Fed will actually cut rates.
And don't worry, we'll close out the episode with our tradition, the craziest thing I saw in markets this week. Don't worry, Sarah. I got a good one. You got a good one?
I do have a good one. I'm ready.
Hopefully our guests have a good one. I think our first guest is a little worried that his craziest thing isn't that crazy. Joining us this week, our pen pal here at Bloomberg. We talk to this guy a lot. Ben Emmons, Managing Director for Global Macro Strategy at Medley Advisors. Now, Ben, you were born in the Netherlands, but then you spent a long time at PIMCO in the Bill Gross era. So I kind of think of you as a California dude. Is that fair?
It's fair.
Is that fair?
I think of you as a California guy as well.
I got the blonde hair. I got the tan.
You do.
I even got the muscles. So, yeah.
So whenever I see you in New York, I assume the surf is not up in California.
Surf is not up. It's raining right now.
All right. So
I got a message from my son's school. Like, it's rainy day today. You got to come early to pick him up. So it's like, hey, okay, it's sunshine here. I'm a good place.
And our other guest this week is my pal, Yi Shi. Now, she and I have worked together for, 12 years? We were actually in the same Bloomberg bootcamp training class years ago.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been a while.
Sarah, the reason I love Shi, I don't know if the listeners realize this, but one of the big perks here at Bloomberg is they put out free soup at lunch, and it's usually pretty good. I'd say they're batting at least 500 on the soups. And she, whenever he goes to get one, he always picks up a second one
team
for
player.
Me, which it's very nice.
Because Michael used to be my boss.
And to paint a picture for those of you out there, when you go to get a soup at Bloomberg, it is like battle
it's,
time.
Yeah, it's sharp elbows.
Yeah, it is some serious stuff.
But as nice as that is on Shi's part, that's not why we brought him on as a guest. It's actually, he's probably the most knowledgeable about Chinese politics and markets and economy here. So no pressure, Shi, but we're hoping you can explain everything to us.
I need to practice my Mandarin at least.
I want to get right to it because you look at the market's reaction this week. Put aside Monday. Monday was rough. But we really saw a rebound in stocks this week as if they don't really care so much about the goings-on between U.S.-China trade. Ben, I want to come to you first. How much does this all actually matter to the stock market?
So it's interesting, Sarah, because you would think that we're going exactly through the same episode as last year, right? When we had the first time the threat of this $200 billion in tariffs, and that was followed with this episode in October and all this volatility. And we kind of have the same thing, right? We had him coming out suddenly, hiking tariffs, and then more threats coming. And you would think the same volatility. And yes, that was just on Monday. But I have to say that also at that time in September, October, we had bounces like this. Really because the market is trying to, I think, to do two things. One, it's of course trying to understand what's the world of tariffs really mean. And so there's a lot of opposing views about this, right? Who pays for the tariffs? And then the second thing is, it's like, well, it's just tariffs, right? We're not actually dealing with any kind of rate hikes, even though I've kind of made it like sound like the same. It's not really rate hikes, and it's not really right now killing our economy, right? It will be maybe something in the future. So I think that's part of the reason why you see this relief bounce.
And yet in the Treasury market, it seems very much risk off. You know, Treasuries are bid this week, yields are coming down. Stock market, it was risk off, but now it's back to that rally mode. It always begs the question, is one of them right, one of them wrong, or does one market just understand President Trump's brinkmanship better, do you think? I mean, what's your take on all that?
So I actually think, Mike, that the bond market has been pretty rational about this trade deal. And I for a while, I wasn't in that camp myself. But after sort of this analysis of the latest spat that we went through now, if you take us back to January, when we came in a new year, the market started to rebound, but there was a lot of chatter out there, like the trade talks are going well. I mean, things are progressing and, you know, rally continues. But the bond market wasn't really moving along, right? There was a little bit moving rates, but not much. Of course, data was weak and so forth. But since that time, we haven't really moved substantially higher in rates at all. If anything, we're now a lot lower. And I think that the market in fixed income has continued to look at this saying, this deal isn't that really going that well. These negotiations are maybe that's constructive. And, you know, there's a risk that things do fall apart and that uncertainty is reflected in the yield curve particularly, that stayed flat all the way through this whole episode of this stock market rebound since January. I think that was a clear signal the bond market had a better sense of where we were in these trade negotiations than the stock market.
So you mentioned that something people are trying to figure out is who actually pays for these tariffs. And Walmart came out this past week, they reported earnings, and they said that when these higher tariffs do go into play, because a lot of the new list of that $300 billion, if it does go into play, it's really a lot on some of the goods that Walmart sells, clothing as well, and they've said they're going to pass it on to the consumer. What do these tariffs actually mean for the economy then?
Well, the first conclusion you would take is that this would change demand. I mean, one, people would maybe look at those products and buy other things, or people would just not buy them at all, right? I mean, that would be the initial idea. Then I think people would start to anticipate, like, is it going to stop here or are we going to see more? Now, here's an important difference between the episode from last year and this year. This time, the next round of tariffs, 25% on $325 billion or so, is now officially in the Federal Register by the U.S. Trade Representative. That didn't happen the last time, right? We had 10% on $200 billion and then the threat of 25%, but there was never anything else really formally announced, and that threat was taken back. This time we're dealing with actually something that he threatened with and actually put it out there for comment. So if anything goes wrong, then people know, like, okay, there's more coming. And I think that will really change people's behavior by this kind of, like, okay, we're going to deal with substantially more tariffs here, and companies will prepare for that. So yeah, it's a big, big change.
Now, Xi, obviously China can't match the U.S. tariffs dollar for dollar. They simply don't import as much U.S. goods as they export to the U.S. So the question on everyone's mind is, how will they retaliate? Will they retaliate? And, you know, people obviously talking about they own more than $1 trillion in treasuries. They could start selling them off and spike interest rates. Others wonder if they'll let the currency just go into free fall to make their exports more competitive. Now, there's problems with both those scenarios, but I'm just curious, what do you think? Where would you expect to see any sort of retaliation?
Yeah, definitely China has some trump cards in their hands. You mentioned the treasury. You mentioned the...
You've been waiting to use that line.
They have a lot of cards they can play. They own $1 trillion of U.S. treasury they can sell to the market. They have they can manage the Chinese yuan to offset some of the costs from the tariffs. But I think these are like last options. So the signals they have been sending is that they are still willing to engage. They're still willing to talk. Remember last week, before the Chinese send the team to D.C. to continue the latest round of negotiation, Trump was threatening to raise the tariff. But the Chinese still send their team to the D.C. But they cut the trip short. Basically, they are sending the signal that they are willing to engage, but they are digging. They have to make their demand and their bottom line clear to the people in the U.S. and to the market that they are not going to give in to the maximum pressure that Trump is putting on the China.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned the talks in D.C. Sarah, do you realize whenever the Chinese delegation comes to talk in D.C., we send Xi down there to follow them around hoping for a quote?
I have to say, I didn't know that. And I saw Xi's name on a byline last week and I realized, I said, oh, my gosh, they send him down to D.C. to try to get a quote.
I think it's not a bad gig because they never talk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Low expectations.
Except this time, it's very interesting to me because I usually mentioned that the Chinese used to be very silent, especially when it comes to the trade, because they don't want to play the nationalism sentiment at home. But this time, Liu He, the vice premier, who's leading the Chinese side of the negotiation, he's actually gave like two interviews to state media. In that interview, he made it clear the three major disagreements between the U.S. side and China side, which is for the first time they relieved the disagreement from the China side. One is that all the tariffs have to be gone, have to be removed for any deal to happen. Secondly, the Chinese purchase of the American goods has to be realistic. So U.S. can't demand a lot of the purchase from the China side. And third part is the language in the final agreement has to be respectful, has to show the dignity and equality, reflect the dignity and reflect the equality from the Chinese side. I thought this is a very strong signal China is sending because by making this very public, it's very easy to check. So it's very unlikely China is going to back down from these three criteria that are set out.
So if we demand they buy Trump steaks and Trump vodka, that's not going to work?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, those are some pretty strong demands, and now they are made public. Now, Ben, something I've been thinking a lot about and speaking with investors this week is the idea that the logic behind a deal getting done is just the fact that it has to get done. It would be bad for both sides if it didn't. So everyone is holding on to this idea that a deal will get done. I mean, if everyone is thinking that way, does it just potentially make it worse if we keep seeing the can kicked down the road if this goes on until the 2020 election, potentially beyond?
That's exactly right, Sarah, because normally the kick the can down the road has always been very positive for markets because what it meant was that a difficult decision was put off, say a debt ceiling or a shutdown or anything related to that or whatever kind of regulation. So markets have to deal with the negative outcome from that and therefore, rally. But this time, this is different, right? If you kick the can down the road on this trade deal, we now sort of have a timeline what could happen. We could see by July more tariffs on a larger number of goods. In addition, in the following 4 months from there, we could see tariffs on European cars, right? There's actually a timeline laid down there. So yes, this deal is essential to have. Also, I think to the European side that then therefore that will happen too. So you can't really kick the can down the road without potentially causing major market volatility if you disappoint on the outcome. So the G20 summit, it's just like Buenos Aires like last year. They'll get together and it will be really, well televised summit, and everyone will watch the language. And he may go there
if he's lucky enough,
right? And get some, some sense of what they're doing. But then we know, from there we'll think we'll get pretty contentious if nothing happens. So this is indeed a difficult situation. Kick the can here is negative for markets.
Ben, so say we put you back in your old seat as a portfolio manager and we say, Ben, here's $10 billion. You have discretion to buy anything you want, Bitcoin, soybeans, stocks, bonds, anything. What are you trading right now? Are you just staying in cash? I mean, it seems almost like a paralyzing decision right now to try to figure out how to play this.
Yeah, there's one way you could approach it. As an investor, I would not do it that way. You not want to sit all in cash. Some of it, that's just to be optimistic. I think there's opportunities developing, right? One good thing about this is, for investing at least, is that yes, any kind of tension creates relative value, creates opportunity. Any tightening of financial conditions creates value. It was better in December than it is now, but look at how the market has started to rebound. In a way, what happened on Monday was people looked at that, hey, there's a little bit too much tightening financial conditions, there's value, I step in. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do now. Now, to your question, what looks interesting, I still think that there's really value in local emerging markets. I think that if the China situation gets real pressure, that's where value will appear. I would be willing to put money there.
Asian ex-China emerging markets?
Yeah, Asian ex-China, yeah, I think so. I think that would be potentially an opportunity.
The risk-reward?
The risk-reward, yeah. And I think, on the commodity side, the soybean market, well, actually, that looks really undervalued, right, if you think about it historically. But where I would not put my money, and even though I've been in that situation, I would not my money in bonds. Because I do think that yields are, particularly in the U.S., are near
rich,
they're kind of overvalued. They're kind of at the fair value or maybe too low. The economy is stronger, right? We're not decelerating that fast yet. So I would not put my money there.
So going off of that, we heard the likes of Goldman Sachs come out this week, tell Bloomberg Television that yields should not be where they are in the 10-year. It's gone way too far, way too fast. Maybe 2.7% is more fair value. Does it seem like this has just gotten ahead of itself a bit?
I think there's value in the bonds in the sense that if you are like a investor holding both the stocks and bonds, bonds as a natural hedge for your stock portfolio. If you're bullish on the stock market, why not buy some bonds in case bad things happen? So there's natural demand on that. And secondly, in terms of the Fed's expectations, the risk for the Fed is asymmetric. The bar for the Fed to raise rates is very high. For them to cut rates, if a recession do come, they have to cut all the way down to zero. Mm-hmm. So we are talking about 250 basis points. In terms of the distribution of a probability, then you come down to like 25 basis points pricing to the futures, Fed Fund futures market is not that ridiculous strange.
Now, everybody loves to talk about Donald Trump and the art of the deal, right? We're lucky enough to get Ben's notes, and he tried to look at it from the other side, The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Yes. Yes.
So Thumbs up he's giving us.
It's the art of the deal versus the art of war. And I want to quote a couple Sun Tzu quotes from one of your notes. Quote, if your opponent is temperamental, seek to irritate him. Check. Pretend to be weak that they may grow arrogant. Check. And then you write that Sun Tzu's principle is that all warfare is based on deception. So engage people with what they expect because it settles them into predictable patterns of response, occupying their minds while you wait for the extraordinary moment. In the midst of chaos, there's also opportunity, as Ben just pointed out. Now, Yixi, I want to ask you, you know, I feel like everyone in the U.S. tries to get into the head of the Chinese side of these negotiations. And whether you're quoting Sun Tzu or Confucius or Yao Ming, I don't know who. How much validity is there to this? You yourself on the blog have quoted some ancient Chinese proverbs. So walk us through the mindset on the other side. Should we be reading Confucius and Sun Tzu, or is that silly?
There's another person you should read, that is Mao Zedong, Chairman
yep.
Mao.
Yep.
He wrote a famous speech during the World War II when China is fighting against the Japanese invaders. It's called Prolonged War, basically saying that the Chinese need to dig in and fight the fight. The whole anti-Japanese war lasted 8 years. So I think the timing is on the China side, because if you're comparing the U.S. economy and the Chinese economy, Chinese had a bad year last year. Now they seem to hit the bottom in the process of stabilizing and probably in a recovery. The U.S., the fiscal stimulus is fading. A lot of people are expecting a slowing down this year or next year particularly. And also the Chinese don't have the election cycles.
Yeah,
the U.S. does.
Right. Yeah.
So the Trump needs something to show to his voters or to his base that he getting a China deal is a lot of people wanted. And this is the one thing he can show to his voters.
Right, right. I wonder what sold more, Sarah, the art of the deal or the art of war?
Oh, that's a hard one.
I would say probably the art of war, I think.
I'd probably say the art of war, too.
Or war and peace.
War and peace.
Can you get both?
So, Ben, what do you think? Is President Trump going to have to blink eventually because of the upcoming election? I mean, it's very difficult to sort of predict what he's going to do, but where do you see it sort of happen? What's going to happen?
Yeah, so this is interesting, Mike, because if you watch Steve Bannon on a competing network,
That's all the time we have for
that's all the time.
And Mike cuts you off.
Yeah. Okay. But that was a really important interview. I actually recommend to listen to it, because he says two things. One, he makes it really clear that Donald Trump, no matter what, he's just not going to. Absolutely not going to back down, right? He's actually going to keep the tariffs on. And I thought that was very convincing, because he sat with Trump in the same quote-unquote war room, and he called it that way, the White House, the war room there. And then the other part is about the long-term picture behind this. In the view of Trump, China's waging an economic war against U.S. and the rest of the world. And it's been going on for not just now, but like 20 years or so longer. So they have built up during the 20 years a significant competitive advantage in technology, believe it or not. And so this is a real concern on the part, not just here actually, but also in Europe. So there's this hardlining within the Trump administration that is not just driven by just campaign rhetoric. It's driven by a long-term view. I think as much as you may not agree with Bannon's other ideas, but from an investing point of view, I took a serious note of what he was saying.
He knows the subject matter for sure.
So he's going to keep it on till the elections. And if it does damage the economy, he's not necessarily going to back down. That's, I think, what we can read from it.
I want to ask, I know people moan and groan sometimes when people in the finance world start saying that good news is bad news and bad news is good news. But bear with me for a second, because on Wednesday, we got some pretty rough data out of China. Then right before U.S. markets opened, we got weak retail sales. We got weak industrial production data. And what I've been hearing is that people are looking at this weak data from both sides, saying, one, it will force an urgency out of the U.S. and China to potentially come to a deal if we are actually seeing softer, weaker weaker economic data. And then also that could also potentially encourage a Fed rate cut. And we did see the Fed funds futures market start to price in further rate cuts. I mean, is this a real possibility? Is it true that bad news right now is good news?
I think if you look at it that way, then I would analyze it first from what happened in the fourth quarter is lingering through that data.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we now went through the last 10 days since that infamous tweet from Trump on May 5th, and the conditions financial markets have tightened, that's impacting data right now. And we'll see this coming out in June. So the market is definitely, again, bond market is definitely rational about that the underlying data trend is weak and has a risk to become a lot weaker, and that would justify a rate cut. Here's the difference, though, with the Fed thinking, I think, is that, and this is what Hester George said, actually, they cut rates now, they may face financial instability, and it could cause a bubble. On the other hand, they face this potential risk of the economy sliding down. So there's a real difficult trade-off. I think the Fed will stay on the track of saying that leaves us unchanged,
right,
and the market discounts a rate cut, which maybe becomes eventually stimulative. And the housing data today showed that. Right? It was actually some effect on housing now from lower rates.
From lower rates. My favorite part about the tweets that restarted the trade war sent the whole world scrambling to try to figure out what it meant. They came right after Trump's complaint about the Kentucky Derby winner. Did you notice that?
It was pretty upsetting.
It was pretty upsetting. So those stewards down at the Kentucky Derby must have been breathing a big sigh of relief that took the heat off of them a little bit. But Sarah, before we go, you know what we have to do?
I know what we have to do. It is time for your favorite segment.
The craziest thing I ever saw in markets this week. We really need a sound effect. I'm going to work on that. I'm going to get us a sound effect for this.
We'll work on it.
A crazy sound. Sarah, let's start with you. What do you got?
All right. So I was going to go with Beyond Meat just because, I mean, the company is up more than 250% since it IPO'd. It's up a crazy amount again this week.
Now,
but
Beyond Meat, they're the veggie burger company, right?
Yes. Vegan burger company, meatless meat company, however you think of it. But basically, they're off to a great start in the public markets. However, hint, hint, Mike actually sent me a little bit of a hint. I have to give him credit because it's so great. Actually, Bob Mnuchin, yes, that is Stephen Mnuchin's father, won out on a bid over at Christie's for a stainless steel bunny rabbit. And when I saw this thing, okay, he did bid. It says that it was on the behalf of a client. But when you look at this bunny rabbit, it looks like an inflated balloon, I have to say. And it actually is inflatable, supposedly. It's inflatable silver. It sold for $91
million.
Crazy. For a silver bunny.
Well, what's the spot price of silver? Maybe if you back out the ounces of silver.
Probably there has to be a mathematical answer.
At least to be a couple $100 right there. All right, Yishi, what do you got? What's the craziest thing you saw in markets
this
week?
Just a quick comment on Mnuchin's father bidding on the thing. It's interesting that there are three parts in the Trump administration. One is Mnuchin, which represents the Wall Street. And you have Lighthizer, which represents the Hawks on the trade side. Trump is in the middle, so it's make more complicated to read the strategy of the U.S. team. But for the strangest thing in the markets this week, I got a strategist making a song for the bond market, which I saw was very cool.
He made a song for the bond market.
Is it his own tune, or is it to the tune of a song we
just
know?
Just listen to this. Ian Lingen from BMO Capital Markets. Here we go. Hello, rally, my old friend. Bonds have come to highs again because Trump vision softer creeping. Left his seas while she was sleeping. And the vision that was planting in Beijing still remains winning the bond of trading.
Okay, that's the first
one. Oh, my God,
this.
That's excellent. That is very well done. Very well
done.
Good.
I can do better in my Mandarin when I sing karaoke after three shots.
Right.
Let's do it next time.
That's a good idea for the next podcast. Sarah, you were in the lead there, but I didn't realize he was going to break into a song. That was pretty good. Ben, that's a hard act to follow. If you want to pass, that's understandable. But what did you see anything crazy in markets this week?
Yeah, maybe the rebounds, right? The rebound in markets. Is that crazy? We come in and it is like really risk off and people are like getting pretty like concerned and we rebound. Now, how crazy is that? And on what, right? Because really, Is it just a little bit chatter again by either Mnuchin through the Wall Street Journal, or indeed unconfirmed by Trump, by the way, on the 6-month extension of auto tariffs in Europe, or just some sort of other chatter? So I think that is a little crazy.
It's crazy times. We're living in crazy times. It's pretty easy to pick the craziest thing.
That's the craziest.
All right, I'll give you mine quickly. Now, President Trump's companies famously went bankrupt, his casino companies. They both had public stocks for a while. And now, Ben, you would assume those stocks are worthless, but you would be wrong. There's a robust market for paper stock certificates from old companies. And I went looking on one of the websites where they sell. Guess how much a paper stock certificate for Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is going for? Now, a reminder, this company went bankrupt in 2004. Yishi, how much would you pay for a Trump Hotel and Casino Resort paper stock certificate?
$2.
$2? Sarah, can you outbid that?
I don't know if I would personally outbid it, but I would say that it's much higher than that.
$495.
Whoa.
I thought it was $200. It was in my mind. But there you go.
For $249, you can get Trump Entertainment Resorts, which was the follow-on company when they emerged from bankruptcy. Then that company went bankrupt in 2014. So that's only $249. You know, this validates my instinct as a hoarder. Never throw anything out. You know, I can imagine after those bankruptcies, you're ripping up your stock
certificates. One of those days, Mike. I mean, some random paper in your house is going to be worth $400-something bucks.
Absolutely.
That's all the time we have today, though. Yishi, Ben Emmons, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you
for having
me. Thank you.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek. Mike is at Reaganonymous. Our guest, Ben Emmons, is at ChiefEconomist6. And Yishi is She Yi Bloomberg. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcast is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.